April, you know, we can expect showers. And they're still calling for temperatures to get up into the mid-50s today. I don't know. We're at 49 right now. Because everything is so soggy, it feels a little chillier than that. We're going to be talking about a big career fair coming up on the first portion of the program today. And then later, I hope you can stay with us, we're going to find out about the Pennsylvania Lumber Museum. I didn't even know we had one, did you? Lumber was a big industry in Pennsylvania. I mean, it isn't so much anymore, but it was huge. And we'll find out where this lumber museum is and what they do and so on and so forth. We'll be talking with Josh Roth about that a little bit later on the program today. But our first guests are with us here in the studio. Sue Bowser is here. She's the site administrator for Pennsylvania Career Link here in Butler. Sue, it's good to see you again. Nice to have you back with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us today.
Also with us is Norm Magliocca. Norm is the Veterans Employment Representative with CareerLink. And Norm, nice to have you here as well.
Well, thank you for having me.
The main purpose of our discussion today is to let people know, Sue, that there is a big job and career fair coming up later this month. Pretty big one, I guess, huh?
Yes, it's going to be very big. As of today, we have 92 vendors registered.
Oh, my.
Yes. We call it the, it's our annual spring hiring event, job and career fair. Mm-hmm. Out of the 75 employers that are going to be there, 27 are planning to do interviewing on site.
And when does this take place?
It will take place on Wednesday, April 17th.
Okay. I'm still getting used to the fact that it's not March anymore. Let me get my hands on this. That would be a week from next Wednesday, right?
Yes, a week from next Wednesday.
Not next week, but the week after that. And going to be at the Butler Days Inn?
At the Butler Days Inn, yes.
Will there be pre-registration necessary for this, or can people just drop in?
No, we want people to stop in the day of. We have registration forms that we need to capture some information. We email out the registration forms ahead of time and ask people to bring them with them if they'd mm-hmm. like to, but mm-hmm. you don't have to. We'll have forms there.
What are the hours?
The hours are 9:30 a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m.
Okay. So make sure you don't miss out on this if you're looking for a job or a new job, or you're also calling it a career fair. So there's some pretty good jobs that might be available here, huh?
Oh, yes. There's going to be quite a few. Every employer has sent us the information, the jobs they're hiring for. We're currently putting that program book together. There's a lot in the healthcare industry. Mm-hmm. There's drivers, heavy equipment. There's quite a few variety of jobs. For someone who is looking for a job, it's a great opportunity. For someone who's looking for a different job, it's also a great opportunity. You have a chance to network with the actual people who do the hiring, because mm-hmm. they're the ones that are going to be at each company's booth.
Let me talk with Norm a little bit. Norm Magliocca is the Veterans Employment Representative. Just what does that mean, Norm? What do you do?
Well, my purpose is to reach out to employers and educate them on the skills and education that people who have served in our military bring with them once they exit the military, mm-hmm. and what makes them a valuable asset to have as an employee.
There could be people who don't realize this. It's changed a great deal over the past couple of generations. I mean, we had veterans coming back from World War II, Korea, obviously with some skills, and they were veterans, so it would be good to hire them if we could. But, man, today, coming out of the Army or the Air Force or whatever, some of these men and women have tremendous skills, tremendous education.
Yes, they do, sir. I'm glad you brought that up. We are one of the most well-educated and professional armed services in the world. To enter the military today without a high school diploma or GED is slim to none. Mm-hmm. If they do allow you, and it's, you know, it opens and closes as needs occur, but if they do allow you to attempt to enter the military with just a GED or no GED, no high school diploma, you have to score higher on the aptitude test than someone with a high school diploma.
Hmm. And the training, once these men and women are in the services, I just know from some of the commercials I see on TV, weapons operators, tank operators. My goodness gracious! It looks like the dashboard of a rocket ship or something.
Absolutely right. You talking cybersecurity, computer programming, communications, satellites, UAVs, drones,
mm-hmm.
pilots, medics, psychologists, nurses.
So it's your job to make sure that potential employers are aware of this?
They are. Yeah, that's my purpose. Yes, mm-hmm. sir.
Yeah. Do you go around and meet with employers, or how do you do this?
I do. I call employers. I try to conduct outreach with them and meet with them face-to-face and hold workshops to educate them.
I understand. I've seen a couple of wire stories, Sue, that a couple of the opportunities you mentioned have high demand for jobs, healthcare industry, and also in hauling and trucking.
Yes, they're both in-demand occupations along with manufacturing.
Mm-hmm. So if you had the necessary skills, you could be hired pretty much on the spot in some cases, huh?
That could happen. And last year we did have people that left the job fair with actual job offers.
People should be aware, if this is the case, that it wouldn't be a good idea to come to this job fair in a T-shirt and cut-off jeans, I don't think, would it?
No, you would want to come and be prepared for an interview, because it just might happen. You want to look your best, dress your best. We always recommend when people get ready for an interview, think about the person who's interviewing you, think about the position, and dress a step above.
Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about wearing a tuxedo or something like that.
No, but you need to be well put together.
Yeah, well groomed. And it's amazing how some people today don't realize that. There was a famous picture a couple of years ago of a women's college team. I don't know, softball team or something that had won a national championship, and they were invited to the White House. So they, of course, they all posed with the president, and they had this big picture that was published on the wire, and almost all the young women were wearing flip flops. People just said, how could you possibly wear flip-flops when you've been invited to a White House presentation? We didn't know. We didn't think, you know. So people need to be aware of that, huh?
Well, dressing professionally is a little more than flip-flops. I would recommend not wearing flip-flops on Wednesday, April 17th.
Comb your hair and make sure you don't need a shave, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, among other things.
Make sure your clothes are pressed.
Yeah, yeah. Neatness, I guess, would be the big thing. And we don't see a lot of that sometimes.
Well, you only get one chance to make a first impression, so you might as well make it count.
Yeah, absolutely. Do people need to worry about resumes if they come to this job and career fair on the 17th of April?
It's a good idea to bring a resume with you. You can give it to the recruiter that you talk to, mm-hmm. and we would be more than happy on any day up until the 17th to print resumes for people at the Career Link. All they need to do is stop in, and we'll be happy to assist them.
Is there any help there in creating a resume?
Yes. We have a computer resource center, and we have staff that would be more than happy to help people with the creation of resumes.
Is there some people that haven't done that for a long time? Some people have never done it, maybe. Not quite sure what to put on there, you know?
So, yes, we have there's certain programs that can help to put resumes together. The actual PA Career Link site asks different questions about your job's responsibilities, and when you're done answering that, you have a resume.
Where is Career Link located these days, Sue Bowser?
We're located at 112 Hollywood Drive, Suite 203. We're on the second floor.
Okay. Our radio stations used to be in that building.
Yes, in fact, we're in your old offices.
Really?
Yes.
Really? Wonder if you're in my old office. I don't think so. It was kind of a little one.
I remember that office. We do use it.
the Career Link, second floor now. You used to be on the first floor. That's why I wanted to make sure people were
right.
Aware
we now are on the second floor. So when you walk through the doors, take the elevator up and follow the signs.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people in there putting together a resume, they put too much stuff in it. Again, first impression, a human resources person or a person who's doing hiring at a company, they don't have time to go through a four-page resume, and they won't, quite frankly. They'll look at the beginning of it, and if it looks like it's not appropriate, then, you know,
they pass
right
it on
into file 13. You know, if you don't need to list every job you've ever had back when you were a teenager. You want to list the jobs that would possibly be important to the particular job or career that you're applying for.
We encourage people to make it more functional. List the skills that you have, because it's the skills, which can be very transferable, that are going to interest the hiring person.
Mm-hmm. Same thing for veterans, I would say, Norm, huh?
Yes, sir. I always encourage, well, at a job fair, you want to have a functional resume, depending upon what opportunities present themselves at the job fair. But I encourage veterans looking for employment to target their resume to the specific job that they're applying for.
Okay.
So that helps, yeah, target it. We don't use objectives anymore on resumes. You just put the position that you're going for. We encourage them to actually target the companies they want to work for, target the positions they believe that they are skilled or able to perform, and look for the open job vacancies, and as they see them off their master resume, actually construct a targeted resume for that position.
Here's how I could be of great benefit to your company or your firm or your factory or whatever.
The employer has a problem. They have an open position. So if your resume answers that question, then you have a very good chance you'll be one of the people they interview.
Mm-hmm. We just saw statistics actually a couple of days ago this week that the unemployment rate in Butler County is quite low. In fact, it may be at an all-time low right now. It's like 3.3%.
We're very fortunate in Butler County.
Mm-hmm. I just looked that up before I came here.
It's for the month of February, but that's the latest that the Department of Labor and Industry has statistics for.
It is at 3.3%. The Pennsylvania unemployment rate is at 4%. The veteran unemployment rate in Butler is at 3.7. The national unemployment rate is 3.9. And the veteran national unemployment rate, this is fantastic, is 2.9%.
And the veteran rate here in Butler County, 3.7, did you say?
3.7. Mm-hmm. And that is down from, it was 4.something last year at this time.
Yeah.
So we have done some good work.
Well, I think the bottom line is there are jobs out there.
There are jobs out there.
Yeah.
Quite a few. So if you have a job that you're not happy with, come to our career fair and try to find a different job.
Are you free to mention some of the companies are going to be there on the 17th, Sue, or is that not quite finalized
yet? Oh, I can mention them. We have different sponsor levels. We have 7 gold sponsors: Inovia Healthcare System, Aviana, Funyac Landscapes, Hunter Trucking, Life Steps, M&B Ready Mix, who also go by the name Dewbrook, Next Tier Bank are all going to be employers looking for employees.
Mm-hmm. And in many cases, these companies will have their human resources people right there, the people that do the hiring?
Yes, they send their recruiters, they send human resource people, because they're the ones that are going to meet with the people. It's such a good chance to network with these people, put mm-hmm. names to faces. And we always encourage the job seeker, afterwards, be sure to get business cards, send them a note, send them an email, resend your resume, remind them of why they might want to hire you.
So what's the what happens when a person goes to this job fair? Are there booths or tables that they can walk around and visit at their leisure? How's that work?
We're going to use the big ballroom at the Days Inn, and we have the tables will be set up, and there will be a program book that lists which employers are there and what they're looking for, so mm-hmm. the job seeker can do a little bit of research ahead of time. They walk in and they can introduce themselves as they go along.
There might be a line at some places, I would
think. Some will be a little busier than others, yes.
Mm-hmm. And this takes place, folks, from 9:30 to 1 p.m. So you have a period of about 3.5 hours there where you can take advantage of this on Wednesday, April 17th. It would be a week from this coming Wednesday. The annual spring hiring event, job and career fair. Is CareerLink the sole sponsor of this, or do you team up with somebody?
The Butler Chamber of Commerce is our co-sponsor.
Mm-hmm. And you've had this in the spring every year. Is this been pretty successful in the past?
A lot
of hires?
Yes, it has been very successful.
Hmm. No charge for this?
No charge for the job seeker.
Hmm. How has CareerLink changed over the past couple of decades? Most stuff is done online these days, right? I mean, you're not going through index cards looking for potential job opportunities or openings, are you?
No, the PA CareerLink website is where jobs are listed and everything can be done online. You can come to the CareerLink if you need assistance with working on a computer. You don't have a computer, we have computers you can use. We have staff that can help you access what's on the computer. But you can also, at midnight, if you decide to look for jobs and you have a internet accessible computer, you can look for jobs then.
Oh, you can do it yourself from your home. I didn't know that.
Yes, you can.
Yeah. Well, that's a far cry from 20 years ago, isn't it?
Yes, we try to. This statement was, our customers are not in line, they're online.
Hmm. There used to be a lot of long lines.
Yes. But,
in fact, the name has changed. You know, a couple of decades ago, it was known as the unemployment office, right?
And now we like to be known as the employment office.
Mm-hmm. Or CareerLink.
Or CareerLink.
Which really says it all. Hey, we need to take a break. We'll be back to talk more with Sue and with Norm here on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. So stick around. We'll be right back after this message.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Ever hear the green eggs and ham wrap? Well, you just might if you join Connecting to Tomorrow on Saturday, April 13th at the Lindora American Legion as we present Piano Maniacs. You're in for raucous musical comedy, sing-alongs, and tunes in any style you can imagine. Tickets $20 each and proceeds benefit Connecting to Tomorrow's teen mentoring program. Doors open at 6. It's BYOB. Must be 21 or over. And food is available for purchase. Get tickets at the door or at Butler Radio Network and join C2T for some dueling piano fun.
Welcome back, friends. We're talking about a big job and career fair, a hiring event that is scheduled for Wednesday, April 17th. That's a week from next Wednesday at the Butler Days Inn, sponsored by Pennsylvania CareerLink and the Butler County Chamber of Commerce. Sue Bowser, who's the site administrator for CareerLink here in Butler, tells me that you have something called a job club. What the heck is that, Sue?
The Job Club is one of the programs that we offer for serious job seekers. We take different areas of the job search process. One week we'll talk solely about resumes. The next week, cover letters, or we'll talk about how to use social media for to do that. We have a presentation with a lot of information, and then we have a little section called Meet the Employer, and a different employer, the actual hiring person, will come in and talk to the group about their company, what current openings they have, and it's a chance for the people, the job seekers, to ask them questions like, what do you look for in a resume? And somehow when the employer tells them, they write it down and pay attention, and it's really good reinforcement.
Is there ever an opportunity for role-playing and like mock interviews or something like that?
If someone wants to do a mock interview, all they have to do is let us know and we'll schedule it. But the PA CareerLink website has a link to a program called the Big Interview, where you can do mock interview with virtual. There's a person that'll ask you questions. You can record it. You can watch yourself interviewing.
What a world we live in now, huh?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. That's something that I never had an opportunity to do when I was coming out of school, and I think that would have been most helpful, just to practice that a couple of times, you know, so you're not so terrified you're going to make a mistake when you're actually involved in a job interview.
It's a good way to get the nerves out.
Excellent. By the way, we're going to talk with Norm about this. He's the Veterans Employment Representative. Employers should know that they can take advantage of services at CareerLink as well, Norm.
They should. There is no charge for our services. We have a job posting board, if you will, where they can post their open job vacancies for no charge. Also, they can report new hires to the state of Pennsylvania, no charge, and they can search for talent. No charge. As the Veterans Employment Representative, I encourage employers to promote the veterans that they have working for them now. Mm-hmm. If they don't know, I would encourage them to survey their workforce and find out who served in the military that's working for them now and promote that on their website. I'd also encourage the employers to add a link on their websites to encourage former military service personnel to apply for job openings. There's over 200,000 military personnel who exit the military every year. There's a lot of people from this area who are currently serving in the military, and when they're about to transition, they are looking to come home. And when they're looking to come home, they're looking for employment, and they're looking for those employers who are recruiting for them. And I say, you build it and they will come.
When I hear you talking about this, I think of a tremendous movie called The Best Years of Our Lives. Has anyone ever seen that? It's about three World War II veterans who are returning home. So it's an old movie, but they're going back to their hometown, and it details the problems that they have resuming their personal lives and getting jobs. A couple of them in particular have a hard time, you know, getting a job. And you know, they were all in combat,
yes, sir,
in World War II.
Yes, sir. Well, on that note, it is possible, and that's one of the myths today, that everybody who serves in the military does not necessarily serve in combat. It is possible today. Mm-hmm. I mean, we focus on Syria. We focus on Iraq. We focus on Afghanistan. But it is possible to join the military and serve a 3 or 4 year term and never serve in combat.
And still be vital and still be well trained.
Exactly. We have people serving in well over 100 different countries around the world all day, every day.
Yeah, I know that some of the, and I know what I read on the wire stories, but some of these drones and other activities, these smart missiles and so on, they're controlled by individuals who are thousands of miles away.
Yes,
they're either on a ship out in the Indian Ocean or even back here in the United States.
Yes, sir. You think about every piece of equipment, vehicles, computers, satellites, communications. 75% of the military is non-combat related. That means they're trained in an occupation that has nothing to do with combat.
Mm-hmm.
So for all that equipment, all that technology that we have in today's military, you have to have somebody who's trained to fix it and to run it. And that's why our military is so professional and well-educated.
For the first time in history, we have a lot of women that are now coming back from, if not deployment, at least being discharged from the service.
The military has always been, I believe, well ahead of the civilian sector in equality and inclusion. If you are a female, that's what we call them in the military, as many females can join the military as they'd like. They've always served in the military, mm-hmm. not always advertised, but women have served in the military since we've had a military.
Not in combat, though, until the past
decade. Not in combat, but now all occupations are open to females.
Even fighter pilots.
Fighter mm-hmm. pilots, Rangers, mm-hmm. Special Force, yeah, all of them.
Are you a veteran, Norm?
I am, sir.
What branch of the service?
I served in the Army. I was a military police officer.
MP. They still use that term?
They still do.
Yeah. How long have you been with CareerLink?
I've been with CareerLink for about 18 months.
Norm Maglioka is the Veterans Employment Representative. So if you're a business, and there are a lot of people, a lot of businesses that are looking for employees, good employees. One thing that you can easily get from a veteran is someone who is familiar with discipline. This is someone who's not going to sleep in 2 days a week and is going to be on the job on a regular basis and on time.
That's exactly right, sir. And the beauty of the military is when they start out, if they do not have those traits, they're taught. They gain those qualities.
Taught in quotes.
They gain those qualities real fast.
That's great. People can stop into CareerLink, Sue, and if they're not aware of all the services that are available there, I can just stop in and
stop
talk
in
with somebody.
And we'd be happy to help them.
Don't need an appointment or anything like that?
Nope. We're open every day to the public from 8:30 till 4 o'clock, Monday through Friday.
Well, let's go over the details again of this spring hiring event, job and a career fair. Give us the when and the where and all that sort of thing, Sue.
Okay, it's going to be on Wednesday, April 17th at the Butler Days Inn at 139 Pittsburgh Road. It's going to be from 9:30 to 1 o'clock. And we're going to have 75 employers. We have 92 different vendors, which includes some different agencies in the community. And we have 10 training providers to talk about their programs if you're going to make a career change and you need some extra training.
Training providers? You mean like for?
Like schools.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I gotcha. And you can find out about openings. I'm looking at your poster here. Openings with manufacturers, healthcare, which you mentioned, banks, retailers, staffing agencies, warehouses, insurance, professional offices, and positions in the transportation and in the oil and gas industry, too. That's good work these days. Yeah. Well, maybe you know someone, folks, who is in your family or your circle of friends or your neighborhood who might be looking. Make sure they're aware of this fair because this is a big deal. The biggest one you have each year, right?
Yes. And this one's going to be another big one. So we're real excited about it. And please share this information. That's called networking, which is an excellent way to find out about employment.
That's right. Wednesday, April 17th, Butler Days Inn, 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Well, guys, thanks, folks, for stopping by and filling us in on this. A lot of people will be thrilled to know about this if they're looking for either a job or a job change, career change. Norm Maglioka and Sue Bowser visiting with us here today. Thanks again.
Well, thank you.
More to come on It's Your Turn. Take a break. We're going to be finding out, along with you, finding out about the Pennsylvania Lumber Museum on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Stick around. Back in just a few minutes. Time for a checkup for your pet. We recommend Suburban Animal Clinic. Or maybe Fido or Tabby is not feeling so well. Suburban Animal Clinic, a small animal veterinary practice located Route 8 south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's about 5 miles south of Butler. Suburban Animal Clinic, in the spirit of Dr. Dennis Damon. Their services include wellness checks for your pet, of course, also emergency care. They have laser therapy, dental available, also prescription diets. You know, one of the things that are problems for a lot of our pets these days, being overweight. microchipping, they can handle that as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler. If you're headed south from Butler toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on your left. That's Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 South at Thorncrest Drive. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back, good friends, on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey, and our next guest joins us by telephone is Josh Roth from the Pennsylvania Lumber Museum. Josh, nice to make your acquaintance. Nice to have you with us here today.
Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
I am anxious to find out about the Pennsylvania Lumber Museum, and I must tell you, Josh, I didn't even know we had a Pennsylvania Lumber Museum until we arranged our interview. Where are you located?
We are in Potter County, Pennsylvania, along Route 6, in the north-central part of the county.
I know where Potter County is. I had a fraternity brother from Potter County back when I was in school. So, north-central PA. It's pretty much in the middle of the state, isn't it? Up on the northern border there.
Yes, absolutely. The northern border of Potter County is the southern border of New York State. So, yeah, we're about as north-central as you can get.
Before Interstate 80 was built, Route 6 was kind of the northern highway across Pennsylvania, was it not?
Yes, most definitely. And today it's sort of morphed into more of a recreational highway. People that like to take road trips and travel on scenic roads tend to use Route 6 to get across the Commonwealth, and fortunately with their sites like ours that they're able to stop and take a break, and for us take in some interesting history while they're here.
Speaking of history, many people might not realize just how dense the forests were in Pennsylvania back in colonial times. When William Penn was granted a charter for what became Pennsylvania, we were pretty much solid forest, were we not?
Yes, that's absolutely true, and part of the origin of the name of our state, the Penn, is obviously for William Penn, as you alluded to, and the Sylvania is a Latin word for forest, so literally translated as Penn's Woods. And in the 1680s, when Penn was arriving and his first colonists were coming, Pennsylvania was about 90% forested.
Wow.
Across its entire breadth.
Are we able to know what kind of trees were most prominent back in those days, or is there no record of that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We focus heavily on the different types of trees that were in Penn's Woods, and it's some of it is geographic dependent, but a large portion of the state was heavily forested with both white pine trees and hemlock trees, two different coniferous species. White pine being the taller of the two, it's actually the tallest tree you'll find east of the Mississippi River. Hemlock being a little bit shorter but longer lived. And hemlock eventually became the state tree of Pennsylvania in the early 20th century when they were designating those types of things.
Well, here in the western end of the state, most folks in our listening area are familiar with Cook Forest. Perhaps they've even been there. And then a little bit further north, Allegheny National Forest. I've spent a lot of time at Cook Forest, and I know what you're talking about, those tall pines, and there's a lot of hemlock there as well. And that is, I search for the right term here, Josh, old growth, virgin forest, what's the correct terminology?
Yes, both of those regions in the state, Cook State Forest and Allegheny National Forest, have portions of them that are considered old growth. So they were spared from the lumberman's axe and saw during the 19th and 20th century when the majority of the rest of our forests were clear cut, And you can see trees in those forests, some of which are over 400 to 500 years old.
I wonder if William Penn was he actually ever here, or did he name this state from his home base in England? Do you know?
No, he did travel to Pennsylvania on multiple occasions, and one of our sister sites within the Pennsylvania Historical Museum Commission is Pensbury Manor, which is along the Delaware River north of Philadelphia, and that was actually William Penn's summer home. It's not the original building. It was reconstructed, but it is on the location where he lived during the summer months while he was in residence in Pennsylvania.
Well, tell us a little bit, Josh, about what visitors will see if they come to visit the Pennsylvania Lumber Museum. What do you have there?
Well, as you alluded to at the offset, we are sort of a hidden gem. Some people know about us and are extremely fond of the museum. Other folks may be put off by the name and think, Lumber Museum, that sounds boring, but I can assure you that it is most definitely not. Everyone that's come in under that perception has been pleasantly surprised with what we have to offer and the amount of information they've been able to learn while they were here. The total museum property is about 10 acres of developed campus. You start your visit in a 20,000 square foot museum visitor center that also houses our main exhibit, which is called Challenges and Choices in Pennsylvania's Forests. So we basically outline the history of the lumber industry and forests in PA from the time of the Native Americans on through Penn and his colonists up through the lumber industry boom when Pennsylvania was producing more lumber than any other state in the United States by about the 1870s, through the eventual decline and overuse of our forests, then on into regeneration through the state government and programs nationally like the Civilian Conservation Corps, and then we end with today and tomorrow's forests, so how we use and manage the forest today and what we need to do to ensure that forests will be there for generations to come. That's all encompassed in the main exhibit. Outside, we have a recreated turn of the 20th century lumber camp that shows what a typical Northwoods, Pennsylvania lumber camp would have been like around that time with several different buildings. In the camp, probably the most popular exhibit is our 70-ton Shea locomotive. That is a gear-driven steam locomotive that was used extensively in Pennsylvania lumber operations to sort of conquer the mountains and provide the power and acumen needed to negotiate those types of railroads. We also have a functional steam-powered sawmill that we run three times a year where we can actually saw our own lumber and demonstrate how it was done. Historically, our mill is built to look like a mill that would have been in operation in Pennsylvania shortly after the Civil War. And we, like I said, we run that three times, basically April, July, and October are those months. We have a functional birch still that talks about extracting essential oil from the bark of a black birch tree to create spirits of wintergreen. We have a cabin that was built by the Civilian Conservation Corps that we use to talk about that program and the massive amount of work they did to restore Pennsylvania's forests in the 1930s and 40s. We also get into the tanning industry, which is really one of the what I like to call the unsung heroes of the lumber industry. People don't often think of leather when they talk about lumber, but the bark of our hemlock trees was extensively used in the production of leather. And as Pennsylvania led the nation in lumber production by 1870, we led the world in leather production by about the 1890s.
I had no idea.
We have a building that has a diesel locomotive that was built in 1945 and was used as a switch engine at a tannery in Elk County, and we sort of talk about that whole process. And our newest exhibit is the Bob and Dottie Weber cabin. They were natives of Lycoming County, or that's where they chose to live the majority of their life. For about 50 years in a cabin that we have now moved to our site. It's less than 500 square feet, had no electricity, plumbing, or running water. And as I said, they lived in that space for over 50 years, and we talk about them and their work to both promote Pennsylvania's forests as a source of recreation to folks in the Commonwealth and really around the world, and the efforts that they made to help conserve Pennsylvania's forests. That exhibit just came online in late 2018, early this year. Everything we've got, we generally tell folks to leave at least an hour to an hour and a half to see it all. But I've had folks spend all day here. It really depends on your level of interest in the subject material. But generally anybody, even somebody with just a passing interest in history can find something compelling and engaging that they can really relate to once they're here.
I could easily spend a half a day there. Well, all the things you've mentioned sound very, very interesting to me. We're speaking with Josh Roth from the Pennsylvania Lumber Museum in Potter County. Is there a town nearby that people, you know, if they were looking it up on a map or something, Josh, that they could find you?
The two most populous places in Potter County are the cities of, or I should say towns, of Cattersport and Galeton. And both of those towns are along Route 6, and we're exactly in the middle in between them. So it's about 10 miles west to the town of Cattersport, and about 10 miles east of us to the town of Galeton. You know, if you continue on east, you're going to run into Route 15, about an hour east of us. That's the nearest main highway. And then Route 86, which is up in New York State, is the main interstate.
Easily a day trip from Butler County.
Well, and lots of other things to see and do in the area. So it's not just coming up here for just the museum. You can make a day of it and see the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon or the Elk Visitor Center, Kinzu Bridge, the Ice Mine, lots of other things.
I know that some of our basketball teams in northern Butler County, like Carn City and AC Valley and so on, they play Cowdersport High School in basketball in the playoffs. So this is doable, folks. It's not like you're, you know, driving to Colorado or something like that. It's a wonderful day trip, or even a two-day trip if you'd like to make it, to the Pennsylvania Lumber Museum. Is there an admission charge? How much does it cost to get in and see all this, Josh?
Yes, there is an admission, and our admission costs go to pay for the work that the Pennsylvania Historical Museum Commission does to preserve and interpret history in Pennsylvania, and it also helps our friends of the museum group, the Pennsylvania Lumber Museum Associates, who are a 501c organization that work for the betterment of the site, both in terms of our collection and educational opportunities and programming. Regular admission is $8 for adults, $7 for seniors, that's anyone age 65 or older. Younger folks between the ages of 3 and 11 are charged $5 each, and children under 3 are free.
Oh.
We also have discounted rates for group admissions and students, and one of the interesting group tours we can do is called Lunch with Loggers, where we actually include a service of a lunch in the mess hall building out in the lumber camp, so you can really get a feel of what it was like to live as a Pennsylvania woodhick, which is our colloquial term for a someone working in the lumber or logging industry.
Hey, I have lots more questions for Josh. Have to take a quick break here, though, so we'll be back to pick up our conversation with him here on It's Your Turn on WISR in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today is Miller Shoes, serving our area for 126 years now. Wow. That's right. Since 1893, Miller Shoes, downtown Butler, there at 215 South Main Street. Spring weather is here. Summer is just around the corner. If you're looking for new athletic shoes, need some new tennies, they've got every brand, all the popular brands at Miller Shoes for men, women, teens, kids. Your choice, Nike, New Balance, Saucony, Rockport, Keds, Skechers, Easy Spirit, Asics, ProPet. No need to go to three or four different places. They've got them all under one roof at Miller's Shoes. Also, there's always a wide variety of ladies and men's shoes on racks, sale priced. They have famous name brand shoes at Miller's. Shoes, you know, are going to last. Rockport, good shoe. Timberland shoes and boots, terrific brand. Trotters. And they're also your local headquarters for SAS Comfort Shoes. Most comfortable shoe you ever put on. Made in America, too. And by the way, with summer weather just around the corner, SAS Comfort Shoes also make sandals in a variety of styles and colors. Miller's Shoes, great selection, great price, and a big smile from the Ciprians, too. At Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. We'll be right back.
Butler Health System is a top 100 hospital for getting Doug back to playing with his grandkids and managing his farm.
For ensuring that Craig made it to his daughter's college graduation.
For helping Ray travel to Europe to visit his family.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide nationally recognized care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Welcome back, folks. If you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn, welcome. I'm Dave Malarkey. We're chatting with Josh Roth from the Pennsylvania Lumber Museum, which would be a great place to visit. Fascinating. I would love to see the steam-powered sawmill. And you say that's in operation three times during the year, Josh?
Yes, we operate that in conjunction with special events that we do at the museum. So it's actually a multiple benefit for one visit. The next time we will be running it will be in 2 weeks, which is April 13th. That is our spring antique show, spring antique and collectible show. In addition to the sawmill run, we've got a dozen vendors from different parts of the East Coast selling a variety of items, plates, tools, glassware, books, coins, in our museum program facility. And then, as mentioned, the sawmill will be in operation on Saturday. We'll also be running the birch still that I mentioned earlier. Think of that as a big pressure cooker that extracts essential oil from the bark of the black birch, creating spirits of wintergreen, which was historically used for medicinal purposes and as a flavoring. We will also have a blacksmith demonstrating in our blacksmith shop in the lumber camp, and some folks in doing a cooking demonstration on our wood-fired cook stove in the lumber camp. So lots of different activities that are not your typical happenings for just a regular visit happening on that day. The July event coincides with our Bark Peelers Festival, which is actually the biggest event we have during the calendar year. We'll see anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 people over the course of the weekend for that event. Lots of demonstrations like the ones I already talked about, in addition to horse skidding, woodhick skills, contests that are open to the public, the two-man cross-cut saw contest, log burling, which is a log that's floating on our log pond, contestants trying to run in opposite directions and roll the other person off into the water. That's July 6th and 7th this year. And then the October event is the second antique and collectible show that we have, very much similar to the April event. That event will be October the 12th and 13th. And that October 12th date will be the final date of the year for the sawmill. So April 13th, July 6th and 7th, and October 12th for the sawmill in 2019.
Do you have a website, Josh, where this information might be available?
Yes, absolutely. That's a perfect place to go to find out more about the museum and plan your visit, and that is www.lumbermuseum.org. So simple enough to remember. We also have a Facebook page that is the PA Lumber Museum at Facebook, and an Instagram page as well.
Tell me about a lumber camp. Is this something that was set up on a temporary basis, when guys would come in to clear out trees from a particular area, and then they'd break up and go somewhere else? Is that the deal on that?
That's the exact idea, Dave. Yes, we the lumber camp, because the mountains, mountainous region up here was so remote, there weren't a lot of communities in existence at the time when the demand for Pennsylvania timber was there. So it wasn't like you could just live in your own home, walk out to the job site every day, and then come back home in the evening. The men that were clearing the forest and processing the lumber for use, not just in Pennsylvania, but all across the country and the world, had to essentially come up with their own community, sort of carved out of the wilderness near where they were working. So the camp typically had a bunkhouse and mess hall, which is the place where the men would sleep and eat. Ours has a blacksmith shop, which was also another common addition. There again, if something broke, you couldn't just run out to the store and get a replacement. You needed somebody to be able to repair and make tools that you needed on the fly. The other building is a stable and hay storage. So if a typical lumber camp had 40 to 60 men, you'd probably have about half as many horses. They work in teams to skid logs out of the woods to a place near the railroad tracks where they could be loaded to transport to a mill. And then with that in mind, we also have a building that is our engine house, where we have our Shea locomotive, which I also mentioned earlier. It's a 70-ton geared locomotive. It was manufactured in the early 20th century. And while ours, the particular one we have on display, did not see use in Pennsylvania, it is identical for all intents and purposes to the type of locomotive that would have been used in PA to transport logs out of those rough and tumble mountainous regions to the mills where they could be sawn.
Would this be, when you say a geared locomotive, I once rode on a cog railway in New Hampshire. Is that what we're talking about, where the grade would be too steep for a regular train?
The gears are actually on the drive mechanism for the locomotive itself instead of being part of the track.
Okay.
So the grades were steep, but the gears also have to do with the distribution of power. So we sort of make the analogy that your alternative to a geared locomotive is a rod-driven locomotive, which is everybody can picture in their mind. Whoever's done the locomotion dance can sort of, you know, moving your arms in that horizontal motion back and forth, simulating the motion of a piston that's turning a large set of drive wheels. With a geared locomotive, you have a slightly different mechanism. Those pistons still turn, but instead of turning the wheels directly, they operate a drive shaft that can supply power to gears located on every single wheel underneath the locomotive.
Oh,
so instead of having two big, powerful drive wheels, you have a series of smaller, independently powered drive wheels. And it was that sort of even distribution of power and gear ratio that allowed those types of locomotives to be able to negotiate both steep and hastily constructed railroads. Because bear in mind, once the timber was gone, no longer need for the railroad. Oftentimes it was just torn up, and the materials were used to build the next railroad in the next location where they would be harvesting. So those types of even distribution of power are really more like a four-wheel drive vehicle as opposed to the rod-driven locomotive that would be more like your sports car.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
A lot of people might not realize how big a business lumbering was here in Pennsylvania, particularly in the 1800s and even into the 1900s, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think I mentioned earlier that by 1870, Pennsylvania was producing more lumber than any other state in the United States, and it continued to be, you know, in the top five lumber-producing states through the early 20th century. And, you know, there again, we were blessed with that natural resource in terms of having lots of forests at our disposal, and, you know, we worked through the majority of them. So I mentioned that when Penn got here, we were about 90% forested. By the 1920s, Pennsylvania was down to about 30% forests, and most of that 30% was of an aging quality that was unsuitable for lumber production. But fortunately today, we are back up to about 60% forest, and lumber industry is still alive and well in Pennsylvania. It is by no means just history. While we don't produce more total lumber, we do produce more hardwood lumber in Pennsylvania than any other state in the United States today. The three big species right now are oak, maple, and cherry, all hardwood lumber.
Talk about the importance of rivers. I know here in our end of the state, there was a time when a lot of timber, a lot of logs were floated down the Allegheny. Did that happen in central and eastern Pennsylvania as well, Josh?
Yes, it did. All of our major waterways were used for transporting logs and lumber, in addition to a lot of other materials. But, yeah, specific to the lumber industry, Allegheny River was the big one in the west, the north and west branch of the Susquehanna River in the central part of the state, and the Delaware River along the eastern boundary were all used for transporting logs to where they needed to go to.
In some cases, they would just lash the logs together to form a big raft and then float the whole thing down the river.
Yeah, lots of different technologies that were used. Rafting was important, especially for transporting very large pieces of timber. Our Pennsylvania white pine could grow several hundred feet in height, and it was ideally suited for the construction of ship spar. So all of the big, long, straight pieces that were used in the construction of sailing ships, a lot of those were made out of a single piece of white pine. Hmm. So those rafts would be composed of what were termed sticks, and that a stick is any white pine that could be sawn into a total dimension that was at least 30 inches in diameter, the entire length of 90 feet.
Wow.
So you put a bunch of those together, put them in the river, let the current take you down for Allegheny. You know, you could be stopping at a mill in Pittsburgh or another shipbuilding facility there for riverboats. For the Susquehanna River and the Delaware River, your final destination was often the ports in Baltimore or Philadelphia, where you had the naval industry there building these large sailing ships out of our white pine.
You mentioned earlier a log pond at the Pennsylvania Lumber Museum. What's a log pond? What was that for?
Well, the log pond is associated with the sawmill, and most sawmills historically had a log pond just to store the logs while they were waiting to be sawn. So a log that's floating in water is more easily manipulated than a log sitting on the ground. Because when it's floating, you can just push it around in the water. The water prevented logs from cracking. So after you cut them down and there's no more water moving naturally through the fibrous channels in the wood, when the tree is alive, when that water works its way out, the mass is smaller and it can shrink and crack. But keeping it saturated in a pond would help to prevent that. It also helped to clear away dirt and stones that could have been sort of bashed into the log during transportation. I mentioned that horses were used to skid them across the ground. Mm-hmm. At that point, you can pick up a lot of that material. The pond helped to wash that away because all of that could become a deadly projectile if it met with the saw spinning at several hundred rotations per minute.
Yeah. When did the when was the Pennsylvania Lumber Museum built? When did the concept come up, and how, and when was it built?
The concept was sort of brought together in the mid-1960s. There was a group of lumber industry professionals called the Penn York Lumbermen's Club. So that was the southern tier of Pennsylvania and the northern tier of Pennsylvania and the southern tier of New York, Penn York. And they were working in conjunction with folks at the agency for which I work, the Pennsylvania Historical and Museum Commission. Between those two groups, they raised money and began collecting objects. And in 1970, they had the dedication for the Lumber Museum. So this 2020 will be our 50th anniversary year.
The Pennsylvania Lumber Museum. Lumbering is still big business in Pennsylvania. It was, in a way, it was kind of like the oil boom for a while. It was tremendous, and then it went down because of deforestation. But thanks to well-planned and scientific programs, we are reforesting Pennsylvania. You said we're back up to about 60% now. Is that what you said, Josh?
Yes, indeed. If you look at being down to a low of 30%, we've nearly doubled the amount of forest land that we had in Pennsylvania over the course of 100 years.
Wow!
And we can tie our forest land to a lot of different cause and effect outcomes. Some of those not so good, others more positive. One of them is the predominance of public recreation opportunities through Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. So PADCNR currently controls about 2 million acres of forest land in Pennsylvania, and a lot of that is a direct result of the practices of the lumber industry. The state felt that in order to be able to manage cut-over timberlands, they had to have ownership of them. So around the 1900s, teens, and 20s, they began purchasing cut-over timberlands from lumber companies and replanting them, both to sort of, you know, bring the industry back, and then eventually coming to the realization, as I mentioned, that there are other ways that people can utilize the forest for recreation, for hunting, camping, hiking, all those other great fun activities we all like to do and enjoy in the forest.
What a great trip this would be, folks. Pennsylvania Lumber Museum, it's part of our heritage. Heck, it's part of our name, Penn's Woods, Pennsylvania. Josh, thanks for talking with us here today. This is very enlightening. I appreciate the conversation.
It was my pleasure. Please come and visit with us anytime.
I plan to. Yes. Thanks again. Thanks, Josh.
You're very welcome.
Josh Roth with the Pennsylvania Lumber Museum. It's in Potter County. Nice. Okay, we need one more break here, and then enjoy your weekend, and we'll see you at 12:30 on Monday for It's Your Turn here on WISR.
You've lost a loved one. You feel alone. You think that no one really understands just how you feel, that it affects everything in your life every single day. Well, Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler offers a unique, sensitive program called Someone's Caring. It's carefully designed to help ease your pain and helps fill in the gaps when you feel so lonely. Men and women are invited to attend. Yes, more men are beginning to realize it's okay to express their feelings in a small group setting. They're finding it really helps. Over the last 20 years, we've developed a program that has helped so many people work through their grief. We offer five programs: a grief support group for those who have lost a loved one, for survivors of a suicide, for bereaved parents, and for those who have lost a pet, and individual sessions. Our own trained bereavement specialist, Robin S. Miller, personally conducts the sessions. Call us at Thompson Miller, 724-287-3706, 287-3706. We can help. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.